We return from the road through the forest to Grandmother Wren's cottage.
Yay!
A carriage arrives.
Hello? I head over towards the horses. I look around. There's the wagon in back. I don't know. I want to go look at that.
You open the back of the carriage when Ame and Suvi first meet. Is Suvi awake or asleep?
Suvi is awake.
Okay.
And you just see a little girl with there's maybe like a flower bud or two still stuck in her hair, but she's pulled the rest of them out. And she's just sort of sitting very still in the center of the carriage floor with this like massive folded up piece of fabric clutched against her chest. And she's just staring at you.
What's your name? What's that piece of clothing? And are those little white flowers? I'm Ame, and do you like honey? And this continues.
Yeah.
This continues.
Suvi waits politely for you to finish.
It goes on for a good 2 minutes of just rapid fire questions and exposition. And Taro is probably around here somewhere, but he is kind of mean sometimes, so don't touch him while he's eating.
Suvi, right behind you, you hear.
She screams and hops forward, and I turn, and then I was told to be polite. So in my best fancy child, she crosses her feet at the ankles and gives like this deep mixture of a bow and a curtsy to Taro, and then turns and does it to you, because I don't know who Grandmother Wren is. I mean, I have some guesses. But who could say? And she still hasn't spoken yet.
Ame tries to do the bow. All right, and manages to do it to assemble something that resembles that bow. And says, do you need medicine?
And Suvi, looking down at herself, you see her, by the way, now you can see her clothes. I'm in this like crimson like turtleneck, long like sort of jumper dress. And she's wearing a pair of like really finely crafted like lilac, light purple colored leather boots. And she's kind of begins to scooch towards you, and just,
I'm okay. I'm sorry. I remember your questions. My name is Suvi. These flowers, and she kind of pulls one out of her pocket, are Asteria, which is what you were saying.
Asteria.
Yeah.
And then goes on for about 30 seconds, very efficiently answering your questions in order.
That's all the rent.
And I promise I won't be mean to.
That's Taro, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you need something from Grandma Wren? Usually people come here because they need something.
I was sent here to stay with Grandma Wren until my parents can come pick me up if they're okay.
Really? Oh, sorry. No, it's good. That's what I'm doing. I'm here too. For a while. You know, and I'm just going to be here for a little bit until my parents wake me up. And then, but in the meantime, oh my gosh, we can do chores together, which is like actually really fun, and I can show you the coolest places in the brook, and oh my gosh, and you could, oh, I could put the mattresses back on the bunk beds, and we could sleep in the bunk beds at the same time and tell stories all night. Oh my gosh, this is amazing. Yeah, wait, come on, you gotta meet Grandma Wren. Oh wait, I was supposed to do something. I'm sure I'll remember it later. As she takes her by the hand and runs inside, fully leaving the horses just standing outside in the middle of the road.
Subi will absolutely allow you to lead her away, but she is looking back at them like, that feels bad. That feels like an unfinished task. And she's just got kid responsibility energy like, I'm going to trust you, but it feels like we're missing something big here.
You take off. The last thing you see as you look back to the horses is you see Taro standing on the lead horse and just right direct eye contact from the horse. You didn't see Taro moving to that horse, but something's about to happen. It's not going to be great.
I again, like, we're running and I stop you just for a second so I can give one more really deep bow to Taro. Look, I've been around magic. I get it.
You walk inside, and as you see the cottage unfolding, you walk in and see Grandmother Wren, kind of beautiful older woman with silvery hair, shawl and gown, very wide and warm and familiar looking in a way, that there's something about her that her presence in your heart and mind the moment you see her the very first time is one of familiarity. And perhaps you are shrewd enough to know that you, like, that cannot be. You have not met this woman before, but her attitude towards you is one of recognition. And she looks and says,
Suvi. My, how you've grown.
Ame, my dear, would you kindly pour the both of us and yourself a cup of tea?
Yes! What kind of tea do you like? And Ame begins rummaging through just this massive cabinet full of tea. There's different kinds of bottles and canisters and tins, all with just like so many different kinds. There's like different kinds of green tea, and then there's green jasmine tea, and then there's black tea, and then there's chai tea, and then there's
When you look back at Suvi, I think she was beginning to open up a little bit just via like the amount of like motion and emotion that you have. She is shut down completely again in the face of tea, and she's gotten quiet and scooched into the corner and is just eyes open, just crying a little bit.
No, thank you.
Grandma Wren looks, says,
does she not like tea?
Ame, go tend to the horses.
The horses! And
Ame immediately runs back out and stops at the door and says,
I'm glad you're here to stay. It's going to be good. It feels like a little different at first, but it'll be good. You'll see. She runs back out.
Grandma Wren takes the kettle, puts it away, closes it, and opens a beautiful little tin jar with some pink flowers on the outside of it. And you can hear the rustling of wax paper in it. And she takes a little sugar frosted biscuit and puts it in your hands.
Thank you. I'm sorry for my rudeness. But the tea was appreciated.
And then she remembers herself to be polite and grateful and gives a very deep bow and is kind of looking at the cookie and not up at Grandma Wren and is just lost in between, like, what to do.
Are you not hungry?
Um,
And then she just sort of bites the corner.
Oh,
it's really good. And then she's waiting like a dog with a snack for like any sort of motion so she can like jam the rest of it in her mouth.
Grandma Wren looks at you and says, "Anything that I give to you is yours in the moment of the giving. That cookie is yours, Suvi, and you may do with it what your heart desires."
Thank you.
And just that, the moment sugar hits, like, her whole body relaxes as she's just chewing with both cheeks very full.
Let's leave the kitchen. Come with me towards the fire. And you see she puts you in the biggest, foomfiest armchair. It truly swallows you up. Like, you could eat Ame, who's even smaller than you, would vanish in this thing. And she puts a blanket on you. It's nice and warm here. It's early enough morning that it's still a little bit chilly out. And she sits next to you, next to the fire, and says,
"Well, you're going to be staying with me for some time until your parents come and retrieve you. Mm-hmm. And it will be an honor to have you as a guest. I can tell already that your parents have raised a remarkable young girl. You are very polite. There are three rules that I will ask you to follow while you are my guest. The first is that any chore you agree to do must be done and done well. The second is to please be indoors by nightfall. And the third, and you see Grandma Ring gets serious here. The third and most important of these rules, and I am sorry to say that you must begin following this at once. While you are here, you are under my protection. And for that to be so, you must not step on any road, not even the one just outside that you were on."
Okay, thank you very much.
And while she was speaking, Suvi was kind of tapping her fingers together in just a little mnemonic, helps her remember things by adding like a little bit of a cadence to them. And she does it again while sort of looking almost unblinking with her giant eyes at Grandmother Wren, and just says,
"Chores, nightfall, roads. I understand. Thank you very much."
She winks and smiles. And you see here, she says, "Your parents are brave and true, and I count them as some of my dearest friends. And as I know that you are much like your mother and father, I will spell out what a witch might know in her heart." And she takes an old book. You recognize a spell book, like the kind that your mother and father have. And you see this one's pretty dusty. It doesn't seem that Grandma Wren needs to recall whatever information is in this book. But she opens it and points to a definition. And you see that it is a magical law of the kind that your mother and father often speak of. And it says only that a path becomes a road when first it feels the touch of bounded wheel or the iron of a horse's shoe.
See, he sits up a little straighter, because that makes sense. And she begins to kind of come back to herself. And she does the tapping fingers again as she commits this to the deep understanding. And smiles for the first time.
Looking at you light up, you see that Grandma Wren says,
"If you would like to help me in my study, you would be more than welcome to do so."
And she, for the moment, just slides that whole book across to you.
Yeah.
Just holding on, death grip on the book.
Incredible. What's the last animal that gets fed in Ame's morning feeding?
The goats. The goats are a lot.
Ame, you have a bucket of feed in your hand. The goat paddock is seemingly empty, except for the dark opening in the small gray barn. The barn is pretty much just a shed. These are goats, after all. They're smaller than cows. You don't need a whole big barn for them. But the shadows in there, the hay crossing over the threshold, little slats on the ramp that comes from the opening in the shed raised up off the ground that come down to the grass. It's eerily quiet as the sun grows higher in the sky and the morning wears on.
A tumbleweed blows by. I steel myself. I open the paddock gate.
Do you attempt to do so stealthily?
Yes, very, very quietly.
Go ahead and give me a stealth roll.
Oh no! That's a two!
You open the gate. You hear no noise. Mm-hmm. Do you enter the paddock?
Yes.
As you enter the paddock, do you leave the door open behind you or do you close it?
I know. I close it. I remember.
You close the paddock behind you with the noise of the latch closing on the paddock. You hear. An enormous woolly gray goat. Its shoulders towering up into a mountain of muscle, its long horns stretching up and away from its face, and its eyes, its terrible alien eyes, pupils in such strange configurations, this eldritch abomination. Livestock! You're out of your mind if you think this is livestock. Whatever world these things came from was filled with horror. As the oldest and surliest goat, who you know means death, comes bellowing out of the darkness, followed by the subordinate goats, the lesser goats of the goat horde. Ame, this lead goat comes out. You are halfway between the trough and the paddock door with a full bucket of feed. These goats are supposed to get half a bucket, and then the bucket stays in the garden shed until it's time for them to get the second half later in the day. What do you do in this
moment? I make a run for it. I gotta dump it. I'm gonna dump half the feed in there.
If you dump half the feed, it will require time and care. Time that is rapidly fading away as the goat charges across the paddock. Do you take the time to do this right? Because it occurs to you that there is a faster way of getting the feed into the trough.
I spend the precious seconds going back and forth. And then I end up, I do the half. I'm going to be good.
I do the half. All right. Go ahead and give me, this is a DC 5 sleight of hand check.
Okay.
A 19. Whoa. A 19.
Incredible. You take the time to do it correctly. Again, a DC 5, normally you never hear DC 5 rolls in D&D, but these are children. So a DC 5 is a meaningful task. To pour a half a bucket without pouring a whole bucket is trivial for an adult, but for a child, this is meaningful. The bucket is about as big as you are.
Yes. I'm carrying with both hands.
The goat is going, you successfully pour half the feed. The goat is going to close in on you, and it is going to make a disarm attempt.
Wow.
Against the bucket.
Wow. It's going down.
It's a goating attack.
You're the goat.
I'm going to roll. It's a 16 on the die. This goat adds a plus one to athletics, so that is going to be a 17. You may use either acrobatics or athletics to attempt to evade.
I have no bonus in either of those, so I'm just gonna... I'll do an acrobatics. That's a 9.
You carefully pour half of the feed. Now what I have to ask is this. The goat's going for an attack. There is one option left to you. You can tell he's going for the bucket.
I toss the bucket at the goats behind him. Pitch the entire thing.
You pitch the entire thing. Okay, go ahead and give me a deception check.
This goat knows.
11.
This goat on a 9 does not beat an 11. So skids abruptly to a halt, confused as the feed goes everywhere. Do you attempt to recover the bucket in this moment that is now surrounded by goats frantically eating at the feed? Or in this moment where the billy goat, the sort of gruff older goat, has momentarily taken his attention away from you, do you attempt to get out of the paddock?
I gotta get the bucket! Gotta get the bucket! It's gonna be good.
Incredible.
I charge in and try to do like a hit and run. Just grab it.
Okay. Go ahead and give me an acrobatics check.
Okay. That's a 7.
Okay. You are not going to be able to disengage from this. So you run in, grab the bucket, but now you are amongst the goats in the paddock. The billy goat sees you and is going to make an attack. He gets a plus 2 to this attack.
Oh, no, no, no. No, no, no.
It's an 18. Do you attempt to interpose the bucket in between you and the goat, or to protect the bucket that you have so courageously recovered?
I got this bucket, and I'll be damned if anything happens to it.
Suvi, you are inside of the cottage, and you hear a... Erica, what noise does... As you turn the bucket away from the charging goat, what noise does Suvi hear inside of the cottage?
Not again!
You watch Ame sail over the paddock fence. You take only a single point of non-lethal damage as this goat butts you out of the paddock, having successfully recovered all of the feed, though half of it is scattered on the ground. And Suvi, you are at the sort of kitchen table with this book of magical laws in front of you. What do you do as you hear young Ame crow sailing through the air and tumbling into a hedgerow?
I hear the yell and then look and watch just a tiny body fly. I think that's the moment where, like, look up, look down. Okay. And then slowly push the big book away from me and hop down, and I'm going to run outside.
Ame, go ahead and give me a dexterity saving throw.
Oh, that's a 2.
Ame is stuck in the top of a barrel of rainwater.
Like head first, too. It's like, that's, you know, the with the little way. Kicking, with the, yeah. with the kicking feet.
Yeah. It's one of those barrels that has a little like hinged top to it, and only so it was only half open. So Ame is sort of stuck in the like half moon opening. And otherwise, Ame is so small that a barrel would kind of be a swimming pool, honestly. but Suvi, you run up and see Ame's legs and a nearby completely empty tin bucket.
Yeah. putting that together, Suvi's gonna kind of just slap the barrel a couple times to let you know that I'm there. And then go and find, like, oh, I grab the bucket and flip it so I can stand on it. Because I'm younger than you, but still a little bigger. I just need a little help with the angle. And then stand on the bucket, and I'm going to try to just, like, wang you out of that bucket, out of that barrel.
Incredible. No role necessary. With that smart, seeing the bucket, you use your investigation, you find a nearby tool, get it. Ame, you are hoisted up out of the water, saved by this stranger who has just appeared this morning.
Thank you.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Mithilis is a menace.
What? Are all the animals here mean?
No.
What was the name of the goat you just said?
Nicholas.
Nicholas the billy goat. Taro's not mean. He's just your nemesis.
Taro's just my arch rival. And, you know, you have to have an arch rival. But you have to, like, also be a little bit friends with them. Because, you know, you're going to be thinking about them a lot, so.
The look you see on Suvi's face is listening to someone who is older and wiser than you and taking what was said as gospel. Suvi has learned something and is now burdened with that terrible understanding.
Gotta have an arch rival. Okay.
And I think she's still holding you a little bit.
Yeah.
She's kind of still tippy-toe on the bucket and doesn't really know how to put...
Right.
There's a...
I sort of clamber it down, you know, like I monkey out of the barrel and sort of hop down and shake myself off.
No,
you were crying earlier. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Are you sad about your parents? And also, you don't need to be sorry.
Yes. Apologize for if I worried you. It's been a big day, and this is terrifying.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to overburden you with questions then. But why do you apologize so much?
Just a pause to adjust the glasses.
Where I'm from, there's a lot of stuff that's very powerful and dangerous, and children are stupid and can get themselves hurt. So I sometimes make choices, and they are wrong. And saying sorry is okay because you're just learning and you're acknowledging that you didn't do it right. But it's the promise that you're going to be better the next time. And that's good to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I make a lot of mistakes too. And I feel like saying sorry is important. But, you know, if you keep saying it often enough for everything, it kind of loses its meaning. Because, like, I know you're trying to be better, you know? You don't have to say that constantly. Because are you trying to remind the person you're sorry to or yourself?
Give me an insight check.
Oh! What? That's a nat one. And that's the one thing I have bonuses in. Oh. So it's a three.
It's a three. I think that I think that there's like this new child that has arrived, and you've been living for months without another kid around, clearly is talking in a way that is unfamiliar to you. Like the way Suvi referred to children. You never heard a kid talk about kids like that. Like a kid being like, well, here's what kids are like. So that's strange. And I think on a nat one insight check, in your old life prior to coming to Grandmother Wren's, there were a lot of children around. And so it would not, I think, occur to you like that that is a way to, like, the grown-ups were outnumbered before you got here.
Yeah.
So it's a strange thing to see a child referring to themselves in that weird, not only third person, but kind of removed way. Over by the road, you see Grandma Wren out. She's got her big, wide sun hat on, sort of covering her. And she's got a gnarled little old walking stick that is, you know, not... It is not a, like, tall and mighty staff. It really is something that has, like, a nice handle on it and really does help her get around. She is inspecting the horses in the carriage, and you see that she is undoing the clasps and harnesses that are attaching them to the carriage. And you see that she goes to the lead one and has her head sort of nuzzled up against its head and is speaking softly to it. And you can see that she will then wait for a moment, and you can see that in the moments where she is waiting, that the horse is sort of shaking its head, pawing at the ground. It's not screaming, it's not doing like a loud neigh or whinny, but you can see it kind of snorting, and in that sort of and you both sort of see her doing that. Ame, you are drenched. What do you do in this moment, having been saved? This is the end of your morning choice, by the way. You always save the goats for last because they're scary. but yeah, you have a little bit of now what would be free time in terms of this is the time before lunch. If you finish your chores fast enough before lunch, that is good. Like, you can go to the woods and like find treasures
running
and
do around time.
Running around time and stuff.
That's like running around time. What do you want to do? You're the guest here, yeah. What do you want to do? I could show you the woods and some of the cool places there.
You just see a momentary look of consternation at the look of the woods, not out of it never occurred to her to, like, go into the woods. And she's just kind of...
I've got, like, a book.
You could bring it with you, and maybe I could show you a place that you'd like to sit and read.
Okay.
Do we have to... We don't have to go by any roads, right? Or cost... No roads.
Are there roads that we have to cross?
Hey, is she talking to that horse? Just be like distracted, staring. Like, is the horse talking back?
You see all four untethered horses as you ask that question, trot off by themselves towards the back of the cottage, and sort of disappear around a little row of rose bushes, and. You can hear, both of you make perception checks.
We out here making perception checks. Okay. See if these horses
a
be 10. Talking.
Oh my God, it's another nat one.
Oh no, you're totally distracted. You're also like shivering. It's a little bit of a chilly morning. But the horses just sort of take off around the other side of the cottage. So to describe kind of what... For Ame, and you, by the way, even as a 7-year-old, like occasionally you've been given permission to like run errands to nearby farmhouses. Mm. The village is a little bit too far. A 40-minute walk is a long walk for a little kid. Mm. But nearby farmhouses you run errands for. Sometimes Grandma Wren will like give you a packet of medicine or something to take to like a nearby house. But the place that is Grandmother Wren's is basically boundaried by the road, which runs up, and it comes quite close to the cottage. So there is a wall of the cottage that actually faces the rose bushes, and there's a little bit of grass and then a fence by the roadside. It is boundary then kind of triangulated by a stream, and the stream comes under the road. So there's a little, I guess what you call like a tunnel. There's a little
footbridge.
A little footbridge, right? There's a little tunnel. The stream comes under. Mm-hmm. And then that third side of that triangle, there's, you know, that area has, there's a little portion of a hill with a shrine. And also near the shrine is a little footpath. Not even a footpath. It's like a deer trail. It's just like a little, it's not even worn by human feet. It is like animals in the woods that come through there. That's the entrance of the woods. And the woods is like twice again the size of like the garden and the hill and the goat paddock and all like the cottage itself is pretty massive. And then it's like four times that size again of like garden and footpath and stuff like that going up to the wood line. And then the wood line is truly like, you know, two or three times bigger than that, out past that. And that, that wood line ends on a little stone ridge that's a little bit cliffy, and it's like too hard to sort of climb up it. And there's also a another stone wall out there that is another farmer's property passed through the woods. But you have been here for months and months and months, and you're finding new stuff in those woods all the time.
Oh, yeah, but there's not like, you don't have to cross a road to get there. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to cross a road to get there at all. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no roads.
And
oh,
and book.
What?
And I can bring the book?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Grandma Wren comes down from the roadside and says, Ami, you're soaking wet.
Yep.
What happened?
Oh, you know, chores.
Did you dump the feed on the ground? You see she points to the upside down bucket.
You know, there were some complications with the feeding time this morning.
She looks and sees, you know, the goats all sort of swarming around in the paddock. She goes,
look, try your best if you can to keep the feed. The bags of the feed are heavy and they're quite expensive and they have to come all the way from town. So if you can, just half a bucket. Don't go throwing the feed around willy-nilly. All right, Ami?
I do my... Yeah. Yes, Grandma Wren.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you go dry off? It's a chilly morning. And see that your friend, Suvi, darling, are there any, you have a lovely dress. Would you like some clothes that you could maybe run around in more? Or you, it's...
Words that don't really mean anything, Suvi.
Yes, please.
All right, I'll see if there's anything else around, or maybe I can stitch something up. Well, I have business to attend to. Once you're dried off, you can go ahead and show Suvi the woods. And there's many wonderful treasures out there, which, of course, you are allowed to keep. However, I would ask that any treasures brought from the woods be exactly that, treasures, and not necessarily friends, as we've discussed. Oh, no. The creatures in the woods are all honored friends, and we respect them all.
And they should stay where they are.
Exactly. We must not invite them into the cottage, and we must certainly not capture them and bring them to the cottage when they insist on remaining in the woods.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can see a whole story in Ame's eyes, like of a little woodland quarter friends that have been coerced or coaxed back into the cottage.
Just a smash cut to so many raccoons. So many raccoons in the cottage, a whole family.
Yes. Does the phrase honored friends ring a bell to Suvi?
Give me an arcana check. Mm.
That's plus one, so a three?
The phrase honored friends does not ring a bell, but I will say, even with a low roll, you can tell that those words are capitalized. Even though they are spoken aloud, you can tell that it's a capital H, capital F.
Yeah, I think Stevie's kind of locked in that moment and just sort of staring at Grandmother Wren, trying to like prize apart why that felt important and special. And it takes her a good like 5 seconds before she's sort of snapped from her little internal reverie.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to go change. And then let's go hit the woods.
You run off to go hit the woods. And I'm going to actually say I want to do a little bit of downtime here. And I want you two to describe the first, like, you know, it could be a week, it could be 2 weeks, but I want you guys to describe the first period of time that Suvi and Ame are living together at Grandmother Wren's cottage. And I want us to translate it, if possible, into one of the first additions to our character sheet. So if there is a skill or a proficiency that you think you would probably learn in this time.
Amazing.
I thought you were going to say song. I thought you wanted to transform it into a song.
I'm going to ask for a song one of
these. I want you guys to sing about your first 2 weeks together.
100%. For Suvi, I think the sort of montage we see is the first time they go and play. Suvi is wearing her full, very fancy outfit that she's worried about keeping pristine and is carrying a book and cannot keep up with Ame at all because she's worried about everything. And then over time, you see like the tights come off and then the tights become an improvised belt so she can like sling the book over her shoulder and keep up. And then eventually she stops bringing the book at all and is actually actively engaging with everything. And if still a little, you know, she's a soft girl. That's an indoor kid. She's not quite your speed, and she is still a little younger and a little less coordinated, but she's doing a better job of keeping up, and her eyes just stay like sort of like wide open and interpreting everything and trying to understand where she is. And I would love to take proficiency in nature.
Incredible. Let's do it.
There it is, the first proficiency.
Love that. Amazing. You add your little plus one bonus. Little plus one bonus to nature. As Erica, as you're looking at your sheet, during that time, Suvi, so the horses actually do stay for the first couple of days. And you saw that after Ame like dried off and you guys were heading out of the woods the first time, you saw the horses all had been tied up to a post around the other side of the cottage. But you don't remember Grandmother Wren being there to tie them up. Did they tie themselves up with their hooves? We cannot say.
Oh yeah, Suvi immediately like was, instead of, because she didn't have anything to change into, just was waiting outside for you to change and is just looking at the horses. And then attempts to talk to the horses.
You immediately clock the same feeling that Ame has clocked here of the fact that there is a lot of magic going on and you're hiding all of it.
Yeah. And that's, there's nothing more infuriating to see. So she's going to speak in Imperial. Mm-hmm. And then she's going to try to use the magic words that she sort of just rote memorized that have no like tether to anything in the world. Mm-hmm. But she knows it's magic. And then she just, I think when Ame finally comes back out, it's just Suvi on all fours, just neighing and braying at the horses to see if that will work.
And I think Ame, in that moment, you also do see that because you, all you've known of Suvi thus far is that Suvi is another little girl, but you see Suvi has a hunger for magic in that moment, and that's news to you as well. So whatever bonding you guys share over the fact that, like, you know magic stuff is going on.
We know that they're hiding something.
Why are they hiding is the thing.
Magic just happens. You don't have to be weird about it. Not that she's weird. Grandmother Wren is so nice and can see through my eyes, probably.
I think it's because we're not ready for it. It's that magic is like, yeah, it just happens, but it's also a big responsibility, you know? It's not something you can always really control. And so the
more that's not true.
What?
No. Magic is super controllable. That's the whole thing about it.
Oh.
Just the darkest look on a six-year-old. Like, I have spoken powerful words.
What you kind of don't realize is Ame has stumbled into, you are talking about, you don't, Ame does not know that you are talking about Suvi's parents. So this is literally like, no, my dad actually can do anything. So,
like, yeah, 100% that energy, like, keep going down this path.
Yeah, it just kind of courses through the universe, and it's just there for us to take part of if we can. But, you know, like, I'm very small, and I don't know. Maybe it's something that you have to, like, wrestle with or something, you know?
No, you just learn it, and then you control it, and you can do it whenever you want.
Ame, give me an insight check again, if you'd be so kind.
This time it'll work.
Seriously?
Oh, no.
It's a total of 4.
Just lie.
I got a 17. It's a 17.
Okay. Give me an insight check, Suvi.
Yeah.
Sorry. 13.
So Suvi is saying some very dramatic pronouncements about how magic works. Ame has her own experiences of magic. How is Ame feeling in this moment when Suvi talks about magic as being controllable, learnable, easy, and seems to be speaking very authoritatively?
Can you do magic?
Not yet. But I can't. I will. And I'm going to be so good at it. Just like my mom and dad. And my aunt. It's Steel. She's just Steel. It's just called her Steel. She's like a parent. And everyone can do magic, and I'm going to do magic.
What?
And then no one will get hurt again.
What?
So, in the adventures in the woods that follow in the intervening weeks, Ame, what is Ame's reaction as these two little girls start to live together? And by the way, that by the time you guys roll around for lunch, your little Sylvan kaleidoscope bedroom has now had a second mattress added to it. So there's one on the ground, and there is another up above, and your study that was up there has just there is another platform. There's like a couple little, it's like a sideways ladder that goes to a new tiny little platform in a new corner. So there's the bunk bed that leads to another little, it's even more crowded in here than it was before.
Wow. He's got like a little loft. First, yeah. So cool.
So it's still the old sleeping nest on the floor. So the mattress up above is the new one. But that being said, do you naturally gravitate towards one or the other of those beds?
I think it's very obvious that like your nest is your nest.
Yeah.
And Suvi will, gently folded cloak, will go up on the mattress. But I think night one, she's going to like crawl down from the mattress and try to cuddle with you in the nest.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. I add extra blanket as well as extra fluffy things appear from Lord knows where. And we do, because, you know, there was one time I heard you sniffling in bed, and so I was like, come on over here. It's okay.
She scrambled down. Like, it was just waiting for permission.
So that, after a long first day of seeing the beds and you, you know, run around in the woods, and also before that first night, Ame, do you, so, like, hearing Suvi talk about magic and having the adults around her do magic, what is Ame's reaction to that as this like budding friendship grows? Like, is that like full opportunity to you, or is that like, what is your emotional reaction?
That's so cool, but it also seems probably different than the kind of magic that I'm doing. It might be a different things, you know, and I don't, you know, Ame doesn't understand the concept of, you know, magical theory or sort of, you know, the philosophy of magic in the world, but she seems to understand that to Ame, it's not important, like, how it works or why it works. It's just like, oh, yeah, it's there. And she doesn't need to understand it. Why would you name a thing and understand it and control it if it's just there?
Susie's nose starts bleeding as you think those thoughts.
As you have these moments, though, so Ame, you ask questions about Susie's experiences of magic. Susie, do you share all of the types of magic you have seen, or do you hold on to some of them? And for this first period.
Yeah, for this first period, I think she talks a little bit, about some of the like showier things that she's seen, and then catches herself because she knows that there's things that you keep secret, and her hand kind of goes to the like amulet under her dress. Mm-hmm. And she remembers that you don't share everything, even with very nice people who show you cool new things, but nothing's for everyone. And then she'll catch herself. And I think it becomes more obvious when you see like her sort of line of like thought suddenly cut off, and she'll try to change the subject.
And I think as inquisitive and garrulous as I am, I don't want to ever make anybody feel bad or feel uncomfortable, so I would never pry about it. But I do see that, you know, you hang on to that cloak so much. I see you take in its scent and hold on to it and treat it preciously. And I see you prize these things and the way that you talk about your parents. And I think that I start to try to think about how I can help that, how I can give you some sort of gift to hold on to those things. And I would like to look into crafting.
Oh, incredible.
Oh my God.
So over this first day, your conversations about magic tend to dwell on Susie.
I want to know. I definitely want to hear
because
all
you,
about
because
it.
Because you have a partner who is so inquisitive, and you have a partner who has sort of spoken about magic in a way that might lead you to believe that she doesn't know about magic.
Oh, a chance for me to be a pedantic asshole? Yes. I understand everything. I'll explain it all to you.
So you take a lot of time explaining that, and I don't think the light ever comes back on what Ame knows about magic.
Yeah. Look, and I'm not a good share.
You are little itty bitty beans. So that unfolds in that way. So it's you talking about a lot of magic, but it does end in certain spots. There are certain kinds of magic that you weren't supposed to talk about, the amulet. And there are other kinds of magic that just aren't nice to talk about. And you think about the smell of that iron, acrid blood on Yoren's jaws, and the fire and the salt and the ash. There are certain magics that are maybe better left unspoken. That night, I want to, before we do the gift, that night, how long, you know, the beds have been made. Grandmother Wren makes a delicious dinner for you both. Does the kindness of actually tucking you both into bed. Closes the door. You see Taro on the outside of the windowsill. So you know he's outside and the door's closed and the window's closed. And then he pops off and goes back to the chicken coop.
For Ame does the, like, pointing at her eyes with two fingers and pointing at him.
After the lights get, after the candles get snuffed out and it's in darkness, how much silence is there before the sniffling starts?
You definitely hear Susie rustle And in the sort of weak moonlight that comes in through the window, you see that she's unfolded the cloak and she's just sort of huffing the inside. And then it's quiet and it's fine. And then you hear like her kind of smoothing it back out. And you hear one little sniff to the outside of it that smells still like burning wood and salt. And that just little bit of acrid metal. And that's when it starts. And just that sort of like inherent burrowing instinct to try to like bury herself in the pillow to be quiet while she's beginning to lose herself to her sadness.
I remember my first night here. It was really hard to be alone, and it felt very big. The room felt very big. And so I made it feel more cozy. You know, I was used to having a very cozy living situation with a lot of other people, and now this was very big and scary, and feels a lot less scary when you have things surrounding you, or soft things surrounding you. Do you want to come down here and be surrounded by soft things? Might feel less big and scary.
And the sniffling just stops. And then you hear the, like, movement. As she doesn't respond out loud, she just climbs down the little bunk ladder and then comes over. And I think just in that sort of, her eyes have adjusted to the dark and she's not that smart. You just get headbutted really hard. Sorry.
Okay. That's it. That's my elbow.
I'm sorry.
Okay. All right.
And then she just nuzzles in.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You nuzzle in. Give me each another insight check with advantage.
Come on, Erica. Come on,
you
Erica.
Can do this.
Oh, thank God.
16.
19.
Oh, nice.
There it is.
On that 16, you look around and you heard what Ame said about all the things in this room. And when first you met Ame has a little bit of a wild goblin energy to her.
Terrifying.
And you realize that I think that this is, you know, this would maybe not be the words that Suvi would use to describe this, but there is an element of when you first saw this room, you saw a treasure hoard, like a dragon's treasure hoard. All these little acorns and whirligigs and bits of moss and things from the forest. And you sort of made it this like acquisitive thing, like, oh, look at all these things that Ame wanted to have. And you realize that you were wrong and that these were the things that Ame wanted to have her. And that this room was so big and scary that she wanted to fill it up so that it would be like the things that she had found were able to embrace her if she had no one else to do it. And you can feel from Ame, what is the feeling in this moment as you finally have someone else in this space?
It actually feels like my home.
And I think, Suvi, you can feel that. And Ame, on that 19, as Suvi comes down and joins you in this bed, you create this warm space in this nest here. What is Suvi feeling in this moment that Ame would be able to perceive?
I think that sort of the move from terror and isolation, I think you feel her just finally sort of relax truly. And even as you can kind of feel like she's hugging you, but her head's looking around as she finally figures out that this room is yours, and she has to think about more than her own feelings, that she's like grabbing you a little more and holding you a little more close. And it's a little less about reaching out for someone because she feels like she's drowning, and more just, this is a moment we can share. And I think the thing you notice is that she's really sees you and has a sense of like, it's us now. And I think it looks like it feels new to her.
On that 19, you feel that connection. And the warmth in this nest of pillows and stuffed animals and all these things on the ground, you sleep well and truly. And there was a horrible night of sleep in which you slept in the back of the carriage for no more than a few minutes at a time. You do not know what protection Grandma Wren has placed on this place, but you do know that your dreams are untroubled. And Ame, you feel a connection on that insight to Suvi. And a 19 is a really good roll, but it's not a 20. So I'm going to pull an Abria Iyengar. I'm going to pull an Abria right here, and I'm going to tell you what you don't see.
Oh!
I'm going to tell you what you don't see. As you save Suvi from the dreams that would have happened, because I assume that Suvi might believe that the nightmares have been banished by Grandma Wren, which is not the case. And you, outside your door, what you don't see, with a hand on your bedroom door and a little candle that she's hiding from giving any light, is Grandma Wren, who sheds a single tear, and speaking of you, her apprentice, says, "Marvelous first spell."
Food is here in 1 minute.
Incredible.
So, Grandmother Wren says, "Marvelous, her first spell," and proceeds to quietly move away. Neither her steps nor the tapping of her walking stick making their way through the door, as Grandmother Wren knows how to ask her house to be silent when children are sleeping.
Oh!
I want to ask a question of Ame here, and this is also sort of a question of Erica, which is, I have an idea of what spell that was, but the truth is, do we think that this was a moment? Was this a surge of magical power, or was this is this truly Ame like learning a spell in this moment? It's fine for it to be either, but I'm
she interested. Didn't. Catch what it was.
That's right.
She just knew that she saw the effect, did not know the cause.
I love it. Perfect. Oh. So it comes as a total shock after a wonderful sleep. You finally have a friend to experience the horror of Taro screaming into your sleeping faces. The following morning.
I don't have the like nemesis respect that you do.
Yeah.
Hands immediately. She is out of bed, feral child with an afro attempting to slide tackle a bird. Yeah.
Go ahead and give me an attack roll.
Yes. 11.
Taro is swifter than the wind and more subtle than shadow. Taro.
I have a goal now.
That morning at the breakfast table, as I assume you both are discussing ways and means by which to find and make Taro pay for this crime.
glue on the ground.
You can immediately see Suvi's mind working at, like, we know he has to stand somewhere. you see that Grandmother Wren, Grandma Wren, puts now two poles of rice porridge in front of both of you, and looks up and says,
"Pleasant night's sleep, all is well."
She puts a little folded set of clothes in front of Suvi that are a little bit, they are your wonderful red dress, your boots. These are sort of a simple, sort of like almost like off-white, but yellow, like a little bit yellow, like cloth clothes to like run around in. Actually, wait, forget that. What are the clothes that Grandma Wren puts in front of you?
Heck yeah. You know those like big baggy, oh, I'm just look straight at Erica on this because I know she's going to pick it up with me. The big baggy overalls that you like put on and they're like really blousy and they tie at the straps at the top. And you kind of just jam like an undershirt into a big, she's wearing a big yellowy ivory balloon of clothes. But there's so much room for activities.
Grandma Wren puts the clothes in front of you and says, if you would like, I have some chores set out for you today, which would be to help me with some cleaning up and tidying and categorizing in the study. There are a number of books on herbology and plants and things of that nature. Ame, I would like you to get to your chores with the animals as quickly as possible. And please do see that you wrap them up in a timely manner. I would like to begin your training today.
Well, Amma is gone, like immediately.
You see, as you're like the bowl, literally like, on the table is like spinning. Partially.
I just take a little bit. I just grab her bowl and then pour it in.
You see, Grandma Wren looks over at you and says, "Have as much as you want," and then rushes out and leans. Her door is like that farm door that the top and bottom like open separately. She like swings open the top and says, "You're training as a witch. As a witch, we will get to magic later." And you see, leans out and appears to have separated this. And this is the first time that you've heard Grandma Wren refer to herself as a witch, I believe. Yes.
Cheeks full, heart open. Like, and you, all you see is Suvi just looking around frantically, like she needs to write this down because that was important words. That felt like a capital W word.
Yes.
And in her panic, just shovels another book. Hasn't cleared the first yet. She's just filling cheeks.
Incredible. So as you are having your amazing adventures off in the woods around grandmother's cottage and their days are filled, you help organize this study, which there are many books. And Grandmother Wren is often busy building new shelves for them because there were like layers of books behind each other where you couldn't see them. So your nature skills develop post haste because you are doing one of your favorite things to do, which is match up things you are seeing in books with things in real life. And there are most of Grandmother Wren's books are not the tomes you remember from your parents' study, which were quite impressive. These are much more humble, but they, of course, fascinating. Every book is fascinating.
Yeah.
Have a lot of like herbology. There's a lot of like naturalist drawings, sketches of leaves and different things. So there's a lot of like conservationist kind of sketches in these. And Grandmother Wren finally begins to teach, and she makes a point to say she's teaching you witchcraft, and you will learn witchcraft before you learn magic.
What's the difference?
Even you having to ask lets me know that I'm doing this in the right order.
Well, I know. I just wanted you to say for Suvi.
Suvi's just looking at two different books with two different identical looking mushrooms, and one is like delicious and the other is instant death. And just like, why? Why? Huh? Why?
She looks at you and says,
magic and the casting of spells is one tool of many that a clever witch can employ. It is important to learn
to appreciate the change that comes from care and time. So before you learn the ways, both subtle and secret, by which we ask the spirits of the world for change, it would help to learn the humility of changing things slowly, yet surely, by yourself, with work and effort. So, come with me, and leads you to a room in the cottage to which you have not been yet, which is a bright and sunny room. It faces to the rose bushes and a greenhouse to which Grandmother Wren has never given you a chore before. Oh. That is out behind the cottage, facing not towards the road, but you can see the fence and the road sort of curving away and the rose bushes and a little corner of the garden shed. Here you see glass beakers and burners and mortars and pestles and all sorts of tinctures. You see a shelf of jars. Some of these jars have liquids in them. Some of these liquids are solid colors, most of them earthy and different shades of browns and reds and autumnal colors. Some of them are deep, rich, venomous greens. And others are bright, almost iridescent yellow. Some of these jars have murky fluids in them. They look like they might have things floating in there. And you begin to learn your first tool proficiency. What is the first tool proficiency that you are learning?
Alchemy tools!
Alchemy tools!
Yay, yes.
The first tool proficiency of the game.
Let's go!
We love it. Amazing. And over those couple of weeks, what are your guys, knowing that you are very busy with books and with learning alchemy and how to make and brew and different sort of tinctures and potions and all these things like that. What are your adventures in the woods like during this time?
What do we do? What's that?
It is always a series of like, what's that? That's calendula. What's that? Yeah. Well, yeah, that's don't wipe with that. Yeah.
No, that one I know. That one I know now. I know that one now. That's why I'm asking, was that in advance now?
And it's, yeah, just a series of Q&A all through the woods. And I show Suvi some of my favorite places. Like, there's the waterfall with a little grotto behind it. And there's a giant fallen tree that spans a little hollow. And it's overgrown with moss and ivy. And there's all sorts of a little ecosystem in there. Amongst the ferns, there are insects and little pools and puddles with frogs and tadpoles and just all the tiny little wonders of the forest, as well as the big impressive trees.
Amazing. Go ahead and give me and how many weeks would we say this first little chapter of your guys' friendship is?
I want to be like 3 weeks to a month.
Yeah.
We'll say it's a solid month. You guys spend a month. And now the days are getting brighter. The buds have fully blossomed into leaves, and now the forest is truly green. It is a young green, a bright green, a green of promise and of things to come. But yes, the forest has come back alive. It is filled with squirrels and birds and chipmunks and all manner of scuttling, burrowing, flying, and chirping little things, full of adventure. Over the course of this month as well, life becomes good. There are still things on the horizon, and there are visitors that come to the cottage, and during this first month, your friendship blossoms and grows as you learn to trust each other in your adventures in the woods through skinned knees and scrapes from climbing on rocks to wonderful firelit dinners. And occasionally, now that you are both studying and studying quite hard, Grandmother Wren will even fall asleep in her big chair with the fire lit as you read and you practice your potions in front of the fireplace in the big room together by a big warm fire.
In this montage, there's definitely a scene of us like behind the rain barrel watching Taro, and then we're like, no!
Wow. Go ahead and give me an athletics or acrobatics roll.
13.
13.
We both did a 13!
Miraculously, incredibly, on the day you try it, with the feed bucket, you get Taro. And the bucket goes over the rooster, and you hear within a tinny metallic...
Suvia breaks into tears immediately. I didn't know what to do once we got him.
I don't know what to do. What do we do? What do we do?
I don't know.
I don't
what
know.
Do you do as you see the window opens?
Girls, is everything all right out there?
Yes.
Why are you crying?
Fuck yeah. She cannot explain, but she is inconsolable.
Girls, you're weeping. Is everything all right? What happened with the bucket? Did you drop the feed?
No, I
chicken. And she just points the bucket under her butt. It's in there. Why did we do this?
Taro's in there? Taro's not in there. Taro's right here. And you see that Taro steps out onto the windowsill from the second story of the cottage.
I jump up, kick the bucket. What's under it?
Nothing.
A howl of relief and confusion and excitement that the chase isn't over yet. Echoes through the woods.
Just a howl.
Birds scatter in the distance.
No! The howl of a young wizard promising vengeance. Incredible. Go ahead and give me, at the end of this I will say, give me an insight check, both of you.
8. 14.
Okay, Ame, you notice, and Suvi, you do not, that visitors come, as they often do, to Grandma Wren's cottage. Suvi's tasks are quite quiet. You know, she's often reading and studying up in the study. And you notice Grandma Wren, when visitors come, never makes any reference to Suvi, and does not seem to talk about her to those that come to the cottage. Will often reference you. You often will set out tea for guests and do the things. It is known that you are the witch's apprentice of this village, and so it's something that you pick up on without having to really have told to you. You notice that, Suvi, you are never present for these interactions, but you know that people have come to the cottage before. And one of the first guests you notice is the baker from the village, who Grandma Wren does mention something about, a question about if anyone saw the carriage come through the village. And that happens in the first week. But that's the only time you hear her talk. And you know that she has never spoken to Suvi about the carriage, has never asked what Suvi's experience of the carriage was or anything like that, but seemed to the specificity of the questions that she asks. And actually, I'll go ahead. I actually have a name for this baker somewhere. Hold on. Lohan the Baker.
Lohan! Already a favorite.
Yep.
Lohan the Baker, who is a proud, proud, tall man. Mm. He has a big, wide stomach and a big, bushy beard and hairy forearms that are thick with kneading of dough and the carrying of great sacks of flour. And he's every time Lohan comes, there is a treat for you waiting, either like a sweet iced bun or some other wonderful little confection from the village, a cupcake or something of that nature. Lohan is a good man, and the village, this is a small village far away, you know, from trial or tribulation. So there's no guard, there's no mayor, there's just the elders of the village. But Lohan is sort of a trusted person in the village. And so, you know, in this very, like, this is a community. There's no government here or anything like that. So Lohan is just someone who comes from the elders who doesn't mind a long walk to the Grandmother Wren's. He's the one that Grandma speaks to. And in speaking to him, asking questions about the carriage and if anyone had seen it, there's a specificity to Grandma Wren's questions. And you wonder if she didn't learn some things from the horses.
I would fully expect that she did.
At the end of this month, as you observe these things, Ame, which again, after that first week, those questions stop and Grandma Wren just goes back about her business. At the end of that time, I want both of you to make a nature check and a survival check.
Okay. 11 for nature and 18 for survival.
Amazing. What'd you get?
A 10 for nature and a 1 for survival.
Incredible.
Very bad faces from Erica on that one.
Oh, sorry, a 1 for survival?
Yeah.
Perfect. That's exactly what I want. Perfect. We love it. Amazing. So you're at adventure. It's been a month. It's now getting to be later in the spring. It's beautiful and green and bright. I would say it's that perfect. It's that time of the afternoon where the quality of light starts to become a little bit more golden. It's not. It's plenty of daylight left, but it's not this bright cutting through. There's enough atmosphere that the sun is traveling through and enough water and enough clouds that it gets a little bit gold. you hear birds chirping. And on a one survival, on a nat one survival, you're up by the cliffs. You're up by those little cliffs towards the edge. And as you are poking around there, looking for, what are you guys looking for on this day?
Okay, it's spring.
Yeah, there's supposed to be like some little like weird fish. You said there was weird fish, like day two. I want to see them.
Oh man, I love fish.
You look for some weird fish.
Yeah.
And in looking for some weird fish, you step on. There is a old fallen tree that's moss covered and it's been here forever. Taking great caution, obviously, indoor kid energy. Subi, yeah. You go around the tree. Ame, you don't have time to go around this old tree. So you climb over the tree, get to the top, and no matter how small you may be and how light you may be, you weigh enough to punch through the rot of the wood and fall deep into the rotting log as the pulp gives way and you are surrounded by darkness, the smell of rotten wood, and you feel things crawling here in the log.
Are you dead? Are you dead? Are you dead?
No, how would I be screaming if I was dead?
We are going to cut from here to another forest. Racing back through the door, Ursulon.
Mm.
You have a gold pauldron in your mouth. What is on your mind as you race back towards the door of Ivy?
I think Ursulon is thinking about getting back, bragging to all of his siblings about his newfound treasure, and then asking his father about a quest. If he has one, how he gets one, if you need honor to get a quest, do you get a quest and then you get honor? Where do you get honor from? Do you have honor? I think he has honor. I want honor, and none of my siblings have honor. I could be the first one of my siblings with honor. I could be the first one of my siblings with a quest. I could have a quest and honor, and it would be awesome. It's just like that on repeat.
You surge through the door of Ivy. You've been gone for
what feels like a little bit of time, you surge through and look down the hill and see that your siblings are still at the bottom of the hill, racing up.
They're still coming up.
They're still coming up. In other words, you are expecting them to be like, maybe they didn't find the door or come through. Yeah. They're still exactly where they were. Now they're racing up as fast as can be, but they hadn't moved at all since you had been gone.
I think Ursulon has that thought for, is confused, but then is overwhelmed by his excitement and just says, guys, hey.
All of your siblings, with all of the murderous rage of them, in that childlike way of being like, we're going to get you. Mm-hmm. There's nothing's going to happen when we get you, but we're going to get you! And you see Narian in the lead, your fearsome older brother. Stop, behold the gold pauldron, and everyone knows that a better game has started. And he says, what's this?
It's mine.
It's yours. And all of these fairies, some of your siblings are the size of a thimble and others are as tall as great trees, gather around in all of their shapes and sizes, and a whole fairy host leans in, and each of them has a moment of sharing the same wonder that Ursulon shared at seeing their faces in the pauldron. And quickly a game erupts as Narian leans in and goes and starts to make a face in the pauldron. He attempts to grab it from you.
Oh, we're going to fight.
He got a 7.
I got a 4.
He grabs it from you and throws it up into the air, and one of the flying siblings grabs it, flies through the trees with it, going, sticking their tongue out as they fly, making faces, and flies straight into a tree branch because they're holding something in front of them while they're flying. One of your tree siblings grabs it, looking at it. A little goblin leaps up, grabs it, scuttles off down a branch. And they begin to play this fairy game of trying to grab the pauldron and make faces in it as much as they can.
That's mine! And I'm going to chase after my little goblin. little goblin sibling.
Little sort of crab goblin leaps off.
And stop! Stop making faces!
You see the goblin runs, and bursting out from the earth is Kalaya, your sister, in her badger form. She's going to roll. That's an 11. Goblin rolls an 8. She grabs it and digs into the earth, and you hear her shout out. Ursulon, I'm going back to father! And you see true Bugs Bunny style, like a burrow, race off into the woods.
I'm going to chase that burrow.
You chase the burrow as fast as you can in a beautiful glade smelling of deep, rich loam and turned earth. The great bear sleeps. Many of his children now slumber in his fur along the ridge of his great back, and many others lean against his massive paws, which are tucked over his enormous nose, hiding his nose and his great paws as he slumbers.
I'm going to look for Kalaya.
Kalaya, yeah.
I'm going to look for Kalaya amongst the slumbering sibling.
She pops up with the pauldron in her mouth.
Isn't it marvelous?
It's amazing. What is it?
I don't know.
It's like the sun, but it's water.
Yes.
But it's stone.
And you can move it. You can take it anywhere.
Wow. Some kind of treasure. Where did you find it?
It was given to me by a brother. He was also the son of a bear. And he had honor and a quest.
These words ring out to no recognition from your sister, but you do hear another voice.
Ursulon.
Father.
Uh,
and a long tongue rolls from a mighty maw. Your father has not opened his eyes. He speaks to you, not yet willing to depart fully from his slumber, and all the better for you and your siblings.
You speak of things you do not understand, my son. What is it you have found?
I'm gonna kind of, not unlike the mushroom before, I think, outstretch my hands to Kalia to take the pauldron back, take it from her, and then climb up my dad and kind of stand near his giant eye. I don't know how big his eye is in relationship to me, but I think I want to hold it literally against his eye.
You hold it against his eye and says,
"Do you wish for me to see what you have brought?"
Mm-hmm. Roar echoes throughout the woods. Birds flee. And an eye opens. It is said that one look from your father's eye can strike a fear into the heart of the bravest mortal man that would see him never again meet the eye of any other beast or being. But he gazes.
A treasure you have won from far afield. And it is the last treasure from that place that you will win for free.
It was given to me by a brother. Also, the son of a bear.
No son of mine crafted this, nor wore it, nor did they. Kneel and hand it to you. You feel that you have found a brother through the door. I can smell their world on you.
Yes. I didn't. I was running, and I was there, and I saw him, and I hid. He saw me. He walked to me. He knelt. He had honor. I want honor.
My son, I want for rest. You want for honor. It seems we cannot always have our way.
Bury the treasure in the soft earth by the stream, and a tree will grow, and its leaves will shine as gold, and you may rest under its boughs. And if you do, for 100 years will you know peace. But there is no honor in these woods for you. Let die that dream, and no rest.
And your father closes his eye.
I think Ursulon is gonna hop down and head back over to Kalia.
Father's has told you that you can have a magic tree and can rest underneath it.
Yeah. He said to bury it in the soft soil by the stream.
Amazing.
How far is that from where we are?
There are many streams in these woods. Burying it in the soft soil and having a tree is something that it sounds like you could do, but your father said there was no honor in these woods.
Yeah. I think Ursulon is going to ask, is going to gesture to Kalia to follow him and start to head toward the stream, but just can't take his eyes off the reflection of himself in the metal, in the glint. Ah. And stop. And look down. And look over at Kalia and go, I don't want rest. I don't want rest. I want honor, and I want a quest.
You want honor?
Mm-hmm.
And a quest?
Mm-hmm.
Where can those things be found?
I don't... The door.
Door?
The door.
Well, we've never gone through a door.
I have.
What?
Yeah, it's where I got it.
It's dangerous to go through doors, Ursulon.
But that's where treasure is. That's where honor is. That's where a quest is.
No. No, no, no. Listen, do as Father said. You can bury your treasure by the stream. You'll have a magic tree.
But I won't. I know rest. I like rest. I want a quest. And Ursulon is going to take off back toward the door.
You take off. Kalia starts to follow, but Kalia is not as fast as you. She calls out after you and says, Ursulon, wait!
I'll be back!
You see, she says, wait! And as she runs, you hear your father's words in your ear of,
this is the last gift you shall receive without a price.
You rush from this place. You find the door. And you go through it. Do you have the pauldron with you as you go through it?
Of course.
Of course.
Is there a way? Does it have a strap or some way to wear it, or is it just the basic metal?
It has a strap. It is its own shoulder plate. You can attach it singularly if you want to.
Yeah, I think we're gonna do it.
I think
as Ursulon walks through the door, I think he just has it still and sprints to the door. But good to know.
You go through the door. You go through the door of ivy, and immediately you encounter more ivy. It's choked. The door has a thicker brush through it. Give me either an athletics or acrobatics to try to push through.
athletics. Oh, that's going to be a big 13.
You begin to push through as you dig. It gets choked with thick briars, but you feel that there is a soft loam or earth that you could sort of, if you wanted to dig, you could dig underneath it.
Heart, let's go.
You begin to dig that glittering pauldron on your shoulder going through. You can feel as you smell, that smell is back, that smell of something sharp, of something clear and clean, of something lucid, something bright, something that matters.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you're waking up. As you move through, give me another athletic check as you burrow.
Big 11.
You push through and you begin to dig through. You smell earth and you're going through something rotten. You're going through something that smells rich and earthy and full. But there's something moving in front of you, something that you could grab onto to get out of here.
Yeah, I'm going to grab it and pull it.
Ame, something grabs your foot.
There's something in here with me!
Are you dead? Is it dead?
No! Wait, what?
Subi, what do you... Actually, you know what? For the first time, everybody here, roll initiative!
Oh!